He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
There's things that I can do, or we all can do, much faster throwing up a green or blue screen than we can, you know, throwing up a very large LED wall or an LED volume. It's just going to be, is it the right tool? Is it the right thing for your story or for your job? Because take all this technology away, if your story sucks, it doesn't matter how good your graphics are, your visual effects are. You know, this stuff is there in service of the story.
Motioneers, we've all been asking ourselves the same question for the last 6 months, maybe a year. We know After Effects, we know Cinema 4D. We keep on hearing about all the stuff coming up on the horizon. But one of the number one questions I get asked all the time is, oh no, do I have to learn Unreal now? Are all my tools going to go away? Where is the industry going? And to be honest, none of us truly know. So I have to look to one of the people that I think about anytime I think about future technology, future tools. He always seems to be where the puck is going, not where it's at right now. I wanted to introduce my friend Jim Gudulik, and I want to talk to you, Jim, about so many different things. But before we go too much further, let me introduce people how I think of you. Jim is obviously someone who knows about all the tools in the world, but I think of him as a skateboarder, a cinematographer, a director, a technology Swiss Army knife. Jim, what job do you call yourself? What title do you give yourself these days?
I hate titles. Just because a title seems to lock people into one thing or another. Mm-hmm. I think human beings just have to title things to understand them. And I've been described as a bit of an anomaly sometimes because I do, or I have worked on such diverse things between film and TV and experiential. And then obviously, you know, my background in skateboarding and snowboarding has led me into work on a lot of interesting projects over the year. But my day-to-day at Dimension Studios is I head up Dimension North America, and I'm the director of virtual production, which is kind of a loaded thing because I work across our virtual production and our volumetric and digital human pipeline. So there's a nice little bit of a title, but you know, it's like I'm still at heart a visual effects artist and a cinematographer, and that's where my eye and my heart bring me towards those things. So when I look at technology, I'm always thinking of what is the creative use of this piece of technology, or what is this thing going to save my time on? Mm-hmm. Especially if it's, you know, the things like AI and machine vision and machine learning today, that it's just like, I don't want a roto anymore. Who the hell wants to, you know, sit there? And as great as the tools are, you know, it's like as great as Silhouette FX is and you know, all the tools that we get to use, they're still tedious, man. They're still, yeah, you know, you're still spending 10 plus hours on the box, still working the way you're doing to tweak out the images and the pixels that we're putting, whether it be on a 2D screen or you know, an LED volume. It's still at heart the people behind it, not always just about the tech.
Yeah, I always go back to just thinking like, you're an image maker, right? The tools change, the screens that we're putting images on change, but like the same core principles, the same ideas of telling stories, the same ideas of making something look beautiful or resonant or scary or fun, like those things don't change. But I go to your LinkedIn because I feel like titles suck and the titles change so fluidly. Like I, even just hearing you say like, well, I'm in virtual production, but I also do at least like the words we use to define the tools are changing so fast that it's almost impossible to even figure out what to call yourself. But this is a dirty word to me. And I feel like a lot of times I've interacted in the last 5 years with a lot of people with this title that I feel like it's snake oil, but I think it applies truly to you. Creative technologist is one of those like woo-woo words that people, yeah, like to use all the time and say that they are. But I feel like the title creative technologist is a lot like a nickname. You can't give yourself it, but at some point someone can bestow it upon you and then it's true. Right. And I really do feel like with where you've been, the way you think about all this stuff in service of image and story, creative technologist, I think, is actually like, if you had to come with the catch-all, it's a really good one. Cause I'm looking at your LinkedIn and this is amazing. Just listen to all these different things. When you're making a demo reel right now, if you're listening and you make a demo reel, think of all these different types of projects that I'm talking about that Jim tries to define. Go to his LinkedIn, current project focus, virtual production, real-time, creative direction, experiential and immersive, real-time gaming engine pipelines, 3D scanning, photogrammetry, LB, augmented reality, virtual reality. Like that is so many different things. It's hard to believe that one person gets to dabble in all those. Can you just tell me a little bit, like, you mentioned Dimension Studio is where you work now, but what is like the day-to-day for someone like you living in all these? Like, you're on the edge. When you wake up in the morning, do you know what you're going to do every day?
Somewhat, yes. Because if we didn't, projects wouldn't get done. But yeah, you know, there's building a team and running a studio. There is the, you know, the business side of it, which most artists are bad at business. I've been fortunate enough to learn more about the business, and I think that's saved me a lot of heartache as an artist, because I have been, for a good part of my career, I was a freelance artist, you know, whether I was being hired to be a director of photography or a director of VFX / creative technologist, you know, and the way that I came up was through editorial, motion graphics, animation, visual effects. And, you know, I got to moonlight as an up and coming director of photography. And the day to day that I did as a freelancer to the day to day to being part of a management team and you know, being a supervisor on set, there's a different types of roles. And what is still kind of inspiring to me is that where I am currently at Dimension and what we get to work on and the things I get to do that still challenge me both as an artist and in the technology side is we're always pushing like what's next. And because all of those things that you mentioned are, you know, kind of bleeding edge and they're very popular today in terms of, you know, virtual production and real time and mixed reality, they keep things interesting because it is moving so fast. So if you split it off and you just took virtual production as a whole, well, virtual production is a loaded word, mm-hmm. because virtual production can be so many things. You can have VR as an aspect. So if you're using, you know, an HTC Vive or a Quest or, you know, pick your flavor of a head mounted display, you could use that for VR scouting, whether you're doing a virtual production for mocap and animation, or you're doing virtual production for in-camera visual effects. There's all these different subsets, and basically you can take your pick at, are you doing feature film virtual production in real time? Are you doing it for live broadcast mixed reality? Are you doing it for a full CG traditional mocap workflow for a fully animated film? That's all virtual production, you know, and it's an approach of like, you know, to get up early, have my calls with the team in London and around the globe. You know, usually it's drop the kids off, grab coffee, jump on production meetings early with the teams in London, and then any production meetings if, you know, we're booked out on, you know, any features or episodics or just team syncs in general. And that's usually, you know, the business side is going through and managing not only client expectations, but the growth of Dimension, since we are a bi-coastal or a global company, that, you know, there's a little bit of the, hey, here's these technology hurdles and creative problems that we have to solve as a company. But as an individual, you know, I still get my hands extremely dirty of getting there on set and running teams. And if there's a technology solution of like, hey, we've got a mocap shoot because we're doing digital avatars for, you know, a fashion brand, or, you know, we're doing for, you know, for Coldplay, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's always something exciting to kind of look forward into, like what these enabling tools allow us to do. And we're still at the early stages of, like, I'd say we're still in the toddler phase of a lot of these things maturing. And it's funny to say that, because we're like, oh, well, that was visual effects. And then that was stereo back in, you know, 2011, 2012. And then, you know, in 2014, it was the promise of the VR boom. And then that took a right turn. And now we're at the whole ecosystem of, you know, what is the metaverse, and everybody wants a piece of it, and, you know, get your virtual real estate and set up shop. So
right.
It's just, it moves quick. And, you know, one thing I think a lot of people are always intimidated by these tools. You know, if you're a traditional MoGraph artist and you're spending all your time in C4D and After Effects and Redshift and your tried and true tools, you're like, either I don't have time to learn this, or, is that really going to be advantageous for me to start spending time in these things? The answer is yes. Like, you should be looking at all of these tools, whether it be, you know, outside of your wheelhouse, you know, Blender, Unreal, Unity, Disguise, Touch Designer, Notch. I mean, but real-time tools as a whole is like, pick one and go after it. And obviously one of the biggest tempo ones is, you know, Unreal. Is it going to replace or circumvent any of your traditional motion graphics, visual effects, 3D character pipeline today? No, but it is becoming more and more a hub of real-time capabilities. And I've kind of been harping on this for years, but it doesn't matter what role you have. If you're a DP, any type of artist as a whole, it would service you best to try out a new paintbrush, you know, and that's all these real-time tools are, you know. And yes, they're very complex. Like, you know, anybody that is using Unreal or Notch or Touch Designer or any of the other real-time tools out there, they are complex tools. You know, they're very deep-seated in real-time technologies and visual effects. And there's a bit of black magic, if you will, of how some of these things work, because it does tie into hardware very well to get a lot of these experiences going. But you have to kind of put your finger on the pulse and see that things have been changing for a number of years now. And people have seen this wild ride of pandemic-driven changes in the way we work and how we use those tools.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those moments where I feel like there's just a certain amount of technology debt from a lot of people who are pushing through their first, you know, the first wave of people with a career in motion design. You know, there's a lot of people that are in their mid-30s, early 40s are like, look, man, I knew Photoshop and learned After Effects and that was fine. And now I had to learn Cinema 4D. And now you're telling me I got to learn what, three things, four things, five things? It's daunting, but it doesn't mean you have to learn all of Unreal, right? Like, I don't even know what that really means. I think that that's one thing that's kind of actually exciting about these tools is that you don't have to learn all of it, just like you don't probably know all of Cinema 4D. But I even see things like, you know, like Vashi Nedomansky, like he has a short that he did that he's literally calling an Unreal short because he used it to generate, you know, visual effects the same way you'd use all the other tools. But knowing these things at this early stage can actually be something that can be like a signifier for you. It can actually help your career by being here early on, even if you don't know everything. You know, like it's not something to be feared. It's something to be kind of almost like leveraged or taken advantage of.
Yeah. I mean, all of the tools that we have, there's very specialist things. It's like why someone would use, you know, Nuke and Mari versus, you know, using Fusion and, you know, some other tools. It's like, sometimes you just need that one plugin that does one thing, and that's all you're going to use it for. You can use Unreal. There are hooks and there are obviously workflows of using C4D and After Effects and Resolve and all of that with Unreal or Unity or any of these other tools. It's also because these tools don't do everything. There is no one ring to rule them all in kind of real time and visual effects. I think it's daunting to a lot of people because they're like, oh man, they watched the behind the scenes on The Mandalorian and like tons of other projects. And they're just like, well, they did this, they did that, and they had access to this. And it's like, yeah, okay, not everybody is going to have access to a Disney budget on a Disney stage that is run, you know, by ILM Stagecraft teams. But you can always pull out the information and you can always pull out those learnings. It's like, virtual production in real time, if you're a motion graphics artist, a visual effects artist, or even a storyboard artist, you know, there's subsets of each one of these pieces of technology that can service you. Like, you know, if I look at it and if I was still at an animation house that I was at early in my career and I looked at just about our storyboarding and our character rigging for that show, like real time at that time would have saved years of heartache and work and render time. That's the whole thing of real time. Like that's what the promise of real time is get out of the way of the artist. And that's what I like about tools like Unreal is to get in there and to iterate quicker what's in your mind and not have to sit there and go, all right, I'm going to bake this out and this is going to be an 8-hour plus render of 14 2-hour days, or you're going to send something up to a cloud renderer and still wait, you know, just wait for those boxes to load. You know, that's I think that's the freeing thing about these real-time technologies is that, you know, if you want to see a sim playback in real time, you know, and this is not selling that every piece of this is like renderless. Mm-hmm. There still is rendering and there still is, you know, things that we know tried and true, but getting in there and auditioning cameras and lenses mm-hmm. and trying things out and getting in and going like, well, I've built a world. It's fully spatial. You know, it's not flat 2D. I can experiment and look at the world building I just did. I could collaboratively share that in an environment and throw it onto a source control and multi-user environment where people can log into the same experience either through a computer and have control or can be driven through this experience. So it's a really cool set of tools. And I keep calling them tools and why I don't just keep going like, oh, it's just Unreal or it's just mm-hmm. Unity or just that. It's just like, you're going to use different things. Like at Dimension, we use everything. Every DCC that's out there, we may have things that are more pipeline driven to certain tools of the other. And that's project dependent of like, hey, this is a Unity project or this one's going to be heavy Unreal. Most of the virtual production projects that we do obviously tend to be Unreal driven just because of the ecosystem and the tool set built out for, you know, for virtual production is very tied around Unreal and some other companion tools. So it's just a matter of the promise that real time as an artist affords us. If you haven't jumped on it yet, why are you wasting your time not doing it? I mean, there's so much info. Like, yeah. When we started in this industry, like early days of, you know, motion graphics, and we take it back to, you know, MoGraph.net and yep. and we take it back to, I mean, shit, if we take it back to early days with Justin and Tween, you mm-hmm. know, before, for most of the crowd, I'm sure is too young to know that Motionographer was Tween before it was Motionographer, and Stash and like all these other good, you know, VFX and CG and MoGraph resources. Before there were even forums, not looking at Discord and Slack and all these great opportunity up and coming artists have today for collaboration, but we used to have to read books.
Yeah, I have them on my shelf right next to me still.
Yeah, it's crazy how fast you can learn this stuff, because it's like, I need to learn how to do this. Google search, YouTube search,
yep.
Snapchat filter, you like.
It's there immediately.
I mean, the kids are a little spoiled today. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners today are in that younger crowd. Not that mm-hmm. I'm like archaically old, but I've seen technology change really fast at times. Yep. And then I've seen it be extremely slow. Like, hey, Foundry, Adobe, Autodesk, like mm-hmm. are trying to choose. Sometimes we're just like, oh man, what are you guys doing? Like, come on, let's go. Let's like, we're over here. And I think that's good. Competition's good. I think, you know, paying attention to Blender mm-hmm. versus your tried and true DCC 3D tools, like with Autodesk tools and other open source things that are out there.
There's so much stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely daunting, but it's like, don't wait around.
It's daunting, but it's exciting too, right? Like, I'm glad that you brought up MoGraph.net, because that's definitely where I experienced this whole idea of kind of like MacGyver, Swiss Army knife, grab anything at your disposal to make a final image, right? Like, I lament the fact that motion design right now is still kind of just defined as, okay, motion design is Cinema 4D and After Effects, and whatever you can do within those two, that's what's possible. That's what you can build against. That's what you can create a schedule, a calendar you can hire people for. Because back then, when like G-Monk was just Bradley, you know, and like Jake Sargent was on MoGraph, and we were all just kind of like, whoa, how did that person do that? I just saw something on Vimeo. I just bought my first Vimeo account. Like, that world, it felt like you could go and grab a camera, you could motion track something when motion tracking was new, and then like stick some graphics in it. But everybody was trying different things. There was analog, there was digital, there was shooting stuff. And then it somehow calcified around, there's these two tools. You can only do what's inside of those, and that's it. And I think that's what's so exciting about just all these things you talked about, right? Like, I'm downloading stuff off of GitHub, compiling it to try to create like a 2D cell animation that was made on 12s, you know, like on twos at 12 frames per second to turn into 60 frames per second, right? And it's literally something that is free. I can compile it. And then all of a sudden I have all these in-between frames, right? There's so much stuff that's not just being fed through your Creative Cloud app that it's exciting. Like, if you can just change your mindset and they're like, oh man, I could discover something, or I could like subvert the way the tool is meant to be used in a completely different way. Like I always go back to, do you remember when Peter Jackson did the first Lord of the Rings and there was that big orc fight? Mm-hmm. If you watch the behind the scenes there, there was this crazy, super rudimentary, like he basically had like VR goggles, but he was in the cave, right? They built the cave and he was filming it. And it literally looked like it was held together by like bubble gum and duct tape, right? And it took however long that was, it felt like 15 to 20 years for that to be available for you in your home office at your desk to be able to do the same thing where you could literally put the goggles on, aim your phone, and that records everything you look at. The speed that stuff is going from like Mandalorian set to now something that you can literally utilize is so fast that it feels crazy, like you said, to not be paying attention to this stuff and just being like, how could I do my own bootleg version of that? How could I go get a Rococo suit and my iPhone and film a short, right? Like that stuff is totally available. And for some reason in motion design, where we used to have this just like pioneering spirit of just try stuff, it's almost doesn't even happen anywhere. It's almost like, no, that's not motion design. Like that's the part that I'm so excited to talk to you more often is just to hear how this stuff is finding its way down to us.
I mean, we talked about some of the inspiration of like what, you know, places we're looking at today and who's inspiring. I mean, you look at like Territory and they're using real-time tools as well. I mean, they're not just baking into like, oh, traditional C4D to Redshift, Arnold, you know, the traditional things. Like you have Territory and you have G-Monk and you have Joshua Davis and like all these individual artists and studios who are pushing real-time tools into the workflow. You know, they're using Notch and Touch Designer to render graphics that would be deemed like, oh, well, to look at it, you'd be like, oh, that's probably, you know, After Effects and C4D and, you know, some plugins and all that. And then, you know, go through the BTS or to their user case studies. And you're just like, oh yeah, it was like Notch and Touch Designer and, or this tool and Unity and Unreal. Obviously the tried and trues are still in there and no discounting all the awesome work that the teams at Adobe and Maxon and our day in, day out useful tools do. You know, I think sometimes some of the bigger companies have rested on their laurels in terms of their innovation and they've put things out that missed and and some hit. And I mean, that's one thing you got to give the benefit of the doubt to the companies. It's hard to put products out. You know, from a software and a hardware level, I've done it. I took a break for a couple of years working at GoPro, so I know what it takes to get an actual piece of software and hardware out. It's not easy. It takes teams and teams to do that. In software development, you know, you're always tracking back from roughly less than an 18-month schedule now. You know, you look at how fast we know our tried and true times. It's like NAB, IBC, SIGGRAPH, we know the drops are coming. So it's like
Adobe Max today.
Yeah, exactly. Adobe Max. And you're like, okay, well, I can bank on SIGGRAPH time, new C4D. You know, I know I can bank Adobe Max, new Creative Cloud updates related to all the video tools and a bunch of new sneaks. And NAB, it would be always like, okay, new cameras, new film stuff, new accessories, like all that. It almost ties to Moore's Law where it's just out the window. Like delivery schedules, pandemic has blown the doors off of so many things, both in the production world and even in the like, hey, can I go buy a computer? Nope, sorry, component shortage. Good luck trying to get Russell a 3090 away from a crypto miner.
I mean, even Thunderbolt cards. Like literally, it sounds silly, but like even just individual components, it's crazy.
I mean, look, it's... As an individual artist, and you know, obviously I have the benefit of being at a studio and having lots of toys, but you know, just at the home office, it's like, can I do mocap from home? Sure. Can I do green screen and prototype stuff? And do I have virtual production hardware and software here? Yeah. But there's also nothing from the baseline of accessibility that I have that you all can't go and get. You all can go and get an Oculus Quest. You all can go and get an HTC Vive and not even use the HMD, just use the Lighthouse and grab a Tracker 3.0 and pop that on your DSLR. Or even if you don't have to, you can use your iPhone and you can do facial mocap and you can do facial scanning from Bellus and all of these other... What I'm saying is like, you know, stop with the bullshit excuses and like just get out there and experiment because there's no excuse. Like go scan your face in Bellus, you know, get it out and bring it into Blender, bring it into mm-hmm. C4D, you know, go, you know, pay attention to the little experiments that like Jonathan Winbush is doing and, mm-hmm. And Matt Workman and, you know, so many other people that are out there that you're just discovering on like Discord and all this, all, you know, as much as I dislike Facebook, but you know, Facebook groups are probably the only thing that keeps you on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And, there's tons and tons of inspiration and tons of like people just willing to experiment and collaborate because we have internet connection. So why shouldn't I be able to like talk to somebody in Belgium or London and mm-hmm. go like, hey, let's try to figure out how to do this.
Well, that's why I always call it the Wild West, right? Like it's not just about, oh my God, there's no rules. Everything's lawless. Everything's crazy. The Wild West is also where legends were made, right? Like all these things you were just talking about, document yourself doing that. Be one of those people. That's one of the things I also lament about like motion design is that a lot of these people who are going that you just mentioned, they're coming from outside of motion design and they're sharing their stuff that we could all be using and collaborating together and Frankensteining different techniques and tools. But for some reason, that level of experimentation just doesn't like seem to be like the fire has not been lit yet. That's another reason why I want to talk to you because the list of just like apps and software, like our blog post for this, I'm going to have to come back and get like links to everything because there's so much, you know, I think that's part of it is that there's just so much to learn that people are just kind of in the, like, I need to be safe and secure phase. They're not in the like, oh man, how could I dream or how could I have fun or how could I in 2 years use all this that I learned in a way that's different?
You know, I look at some tools that I've been super excited about over the years and some of those tools are dead now. They're done. The companies mm-hmm. are gone. And I was like, oh man, this is going to change the industry. Sometimes that happens and they just don't work because, you know, maybe Apple or Adobe or whoever winds up incorporating that into it. So that one piece of software or plugin that you're using just, you know, just got yeah. either acquired or scooped up. And you're going to go through this where it's just like somewhere out there is the next Unreal. It's the next Epic Games. It's, you know, mm-hmm. that probably won't happen for a while. But, you know, you look at the FX Home guys starting mm-hmm. from. You know, or Blender, or, you know, man, there were so many 3D and motion graphic, like Mac based tools that are like long gone. I mean, and you look at the people that I've mentioned too, we take it back to like good buddy, Andrew Kramer. It's like where I got my start and where Andrew got his start. Andrew started off shooting wedding videos, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, you don't have to go like, well, I just do wedding videos. Right. You could use real-time tools for wedding videos and probably kill it as, yeah. you know, you can use virtual production. I mean, people do mm-hmm. things at weddings that are like, they'll pay for you to throw up a green screen and do, like, I've seen some pretty cool things at weddings.
I can't believe no one's like decided to like make a, just crush it on a stagecraft virtual wedding. Like put people wherever they want to go. If you can't fly for the pandemic, put yourself on the Grand Canyon, put yourself on the moon, have the wedding there.
I mean, they do it with the photo booths, that those pop-up photo booths, like where right. they do it. I mean, a friend has a mobile, you know, photo truck and he's a DP and he does it as just in the thing because he's, you know, a photographer, but mm-hmm. It's not his day to day. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter what you're doing today. Like you can totally pivot. And that's the one thing mm-hmm. pandemic has showed everybody is that obviously if you stay still for so long, you're going to gather moss and you're not, you know, a rolling stone gathers no moss as they say. So mm-hmm. be the rolling stone, you know, like if you're, some people say, well, you know, I'm bleeding edge. I'm this, I'm that, I'm working in-house. And people are always like, oh, I want to do what GMunk's doing, or I want to do what Dimension's doing, or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. It's like, well, the only way that all of us got there is by experimenting, by trying, you know, mm-hmm. and I think we're in a place right now where the pandemic has driven a lot of different changes. This whole thing of like, oh, well, if you're at a boutique or you're at a studio, the whole work from studio, work from home thing, as the doors have been blown off that. And if you're a freelancer, using these tools, I would say right now for everybody listening, if you're looking for a career change or you're looking to like just get a new level set of inspiration and diving into a potentially a new path, it's all in real time. It's just, mm-hmm. And real time is another blanket term. So like, yes, it can be related to CG. It could be related to virtual production. It could be maybe you work in broadcast, or maybe it's just, you know, you are doing character and want to point towards creating avatars. That's the way it's all going. And the tools are readily available. Do you need an accent suit at you know, 20 plus K or, you know, Rococo suit? Or no, you could do marker. There's stuff out there that's AI driven that you could do markerless, you know, mocap from your iPhone or from, you know, an Azure Kinect camera.
I mean, those Rococo suits are stunning for what you can get for the price.
Yeah. Are they perfect? No, there's no perfect tool. Yeah. So yeah. Do you have to do cleanup work on a Rococo suit? Yes. Do you have to do it on an Accent suit? Yeah. Maybe a little bit less, but look at those crazy package deals that Rococo puts out there. And you're just like, holy shit. Do you know what that cost 5 years ago to get something like that? It was, it was basically inaccessible. And that's what I'm saying is, I think what we're talking about is it's used a lot. Accessibility and democratization is like, it's totally true. These tools are becoming more and more available. And you look at what Casey is doing with Blue out of that's like one dude in Texas, couple weeks of work, and he's putting out amazing, funny stuff. And if you look at his tie-in of like, you know, putting Mike Seymour's head in a jar, and that's like a whole, you know, FX PhD, FX guide tie back. Yeah. Which I thought was too damn funny that he put Mike's head in the jar. But it just shows you the power of like what one person can do. So like all of us know at least five people. You get one artist who's really good at one thing. You get somebody who's like a DP. You get somebody that's more maybe a producer hat. Then you get, you know, you just round it out. Somebody's really good at ZBrush. And it's like you would do a 24-hour film festival.
Yep.
Well, you can do that with real-time tools. And there's, you know, Epic runs at Unity. There's tons of challenges out there. And you just go, well, here's your perfect example. I mean, Epic is paying people to learn their software. Like,
dude, I wanted to ask you about that. I really wanted to ask you about that because you got in.
The fellowship.
Oh, my God. I was like as friendly jealous as you could possibly get when you got into that. But can you tell people just a little bit about like what that was and like what your experience was? Cause I think it's astounding to hear that, you know, like, okay, so you don't know. Great. You know what? Epic is just going to like basically make sure that you learn how to, if you can, you know, get into the application process. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Epic launched a really cool initiative called the Fellowship for Virtual Production. It was a sign up. So they had like an open enrollment for people from all over different industries. And since the time I was in the beta version two, last summer of the virtual production fellowship. And basically they pay you to concentrate on learning the engine, you know, between 4 and 6 weeks. It depends on which version of the fellowship you were in. So they give you, you know, a stipend to cover your time that you would work on this because you're putting in a lot of hours. You know, I was putting in, a lot of us were putting in 40 plus hours because you're put in these groups. So you join in, you've got tons of people from Epic directly, the whole training team, Brian Poole, Sean Spitzer, like, you know, Ed Forno's like, you get access to Epic, which is crazy. Yeah. So you're access to the training team, you get access to like, you have people from all walks of life, ILM, you know, Lux Machina, you name it. And they're kind of like your special guests who do these little talks for you. And they do recruitment, which is even awesome too. It's just like, if you're looking for it, there is an avenue of recruitment when you finish the fellowship. A lot of people were at studios. I think the first rounds were geared directly at working professionals. Since then, they've opened it up broader. Like I've seen people, because we have a fellowship alumni Slack. So Epic makes sure we are still staying in touch. So, you know, we're connected globally to like all these different artists. And it's like, it's a nice little private click in that way. But it takes you through learning the basics of the engine. And because the engine is so diverse, it is a Swiss Army knife. It does have its focuses. Like, does it take out Nuke or Blender or any? No, it's a different animal. Obviously, for those who don't know what, you know, what Unreal is or haven't used Unreal, you know, at its tried and true, it is a 3D game engine that was made to create games. It still has a heavy mentality and workflow. mm-hmm. in games. It has been adding more tools for people that come from traditional media in terms of like editorial and animation. So it's always evolving. But within the fellowship, you get a good broad overview of what the capabilities are in the engine. Cameras, lighting, animation, character rigging, you know, structure of creating a project. Are you going to learn it all in 4 to 6 weeks and come out and go do The Mandalorian? No. But you'll get a very good understanding of the base layer of that. There are different levels of the fellowship that haven't happened yet, mainly because of the pandemic. So like mm-hmm. getting people to go on stage to the, you know, any of the Epic labs in LA and London and some of the other ones that have been opening up has been slowed down mainly because of the pandemic. But you get access to all the resources. You have a whole learning center. You know, it ties into the Epic Learning LMS system. So it's a really cool thing. And I definitely applaud Epic for doing that, because it has since opened up. So any of those listening, when there's like another open enrollment for the website, and I'm sure we can link mm-hmm. in the show notes, I've seen people that have come that know nothing about, they're not a compositor. They really are a novice to 3D. Maybe they're a director of photography, or they're a producer, or they're like a mixed media artist. Maybe they're a painter. Mm-hmm. And I've seen all walks of life come into the fellowship. And I think Epic is making it really open to go, hey, here's this tool. We're going to show you the basics of how to use it. And then hopefully that's inspired you to go and pursue using it in whichever way you want to. And I think that's, I wish more companies would do it. And this is no knock at Adobe or Unity or any of these others, but Epic is just been going hard with the education.
Yeah, I mean, the range of stuff they've been doing is amazing. For one, listeners, I will be applying as well alongside you the next time it's open, because it's something that, like, I think if we can get enough people who are trained motion designers who are used to using the tools you're all using, playing with it, and showing what you can do with it. I just saw recently, there's an amazing studio called Chromosphere, and they have a little short called Yuki 7 that's all, you know, like traditionally animated the way you'd expect it. But one of their episodes was animated in Unreal, and it was almost like virtually indistinguishable from the rest of the series. And, you know, Epic is pushing that like crazy to show like, look, you can do cartoon production, you make your own games, you can do experiential, you can do immersive. There's so many different applications.
Not only that, but there's the Mega Grant Fund. Mm-hmm. I mean, which is a whole nother thing. And you're like, oh, yeah. Thanks, Epic. Here's all this money.
Go make stuff.
So on the off side of the fellowship, which is the learning side, there's the Mega Grants, which is, I forget, but it was quite a substantial amount of millions of dollars that Epic mm-hmm. was putting towards funding technology and storytelling. So mm-hmm. if you have a film idea, you have a game, you have something that's related to using Unreal Engine, you can go and submit an application. Yes, is it hard to get a mega grant? Yeah, I guess you would say so, because they have so many people applying, and you know, there has to be something that stands out about your particular plugin or mm-hmm. here's the thing too. It's not just for that. People have pitched education, training around that, like a new way of teaching people how to use Unreal Engine. I've seen people get mega grants for that, and they scale. You know, I don't know what every project gets, but you know, you have a project that we did, which was mega grant, and there's more news coming out from Dimension about our project with our buddies at DNEG called Fireworks, and that was a mega grant project that we brought to Epic. So it's just sliding scale, and. Yeah. You know, we'll link it. People can go look at it. Don't be afraid to do it. But if you don't get into the fellowship, there is nothing stopping you with the sheer amount of education. There is so much education on the Epic Learning site. And if you want to focus just on virtual production, you can just go to the film and I think it's film and broadcast section.
There's a ton of character animations focused stuff there. Yeah.
There's just no excuse not to just jump on this stuff. And then, I mean, you could spend weeks and weeks and weeks on YouTube videos alone, because there's a ton of really good people that understand the engine that are putting out awesome training. And a lot of it's free. Some of them obviously have a Patreon or might be tied to, you know, a platform. Yeah, there's no lack of education of like learning something. And if there's one tool that you want to do, just do a Google search, because I'm sure there's a video or a Patreon link to how to use that one tool. So
yeah, you almost need someone to curate the playlist for you based on what part of Unreal you even want to focus on. Because it's so, I mean, like Jonathan Winbush, you brought him up earlier. He has a great training on, for if you're a motion designer and you just want to kind of see like what's out there, what's available, how could I use this? Can I use it for broadcast graphics? Could I use it for character animation? Could I use it for an explainer video? He has great training. But even going back to what you were saying earlier, right? Like, I know this exists and it's just like taking the time to find it, because you can imagine the pipeline and the pathway in your head, taking a Rococo motion capture suit with the smart hands, and like just using like from your shoulder to your elbow to your arm to your fingers. Imagine that that's like a sock puppet. You could literally build a rig that uses Rococo into C4D to drive a 2D After Effects rig. Like, that's entirely possible. And think how fast you could create tons of animation using something that right now no one's telling you to do, right? There's nothing off the shelf that says, okay, cool, you can connect this thing to your arm to After Effects. But you don't have to make too many mental leaps to just start seeing like, oh man, there's all these ways to connect all these different parts together. Like, that's the world we literally live in that you can start playing with now for almost nothing, right? Like, it's amazing how far you could go if you just start learning what, even not even how to use the tools, but what the capabilities are of all the tools.
Yeah. I mean, the tools and the capabilities are really kind of endless. That's why I would say just experiment, because it's the only way you're going to know. And look, I mean, the first time I touched Unreal a couple of years ago, because my real breadcrumb was probably when I got a deep dive into Unreal back in 2015, working on a project with Epic and the Mill called The Human Race. It was involving the Blackbird project.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And that was virtual. We were basically doing real-time AR in virtual production years before the kind of Mandalorian bloom. But, you know, and virtual production for those, it's nothing new. It might just be hyped in marketing and hyped recently because of the pandemic, because of what the technology affords us to do in these trying times. But, you know, front projection, rear projection,
exactly,
motion capture suits, like these have all been around for a long time, you know? So I think some people just being like, oh, virtual production is the new hot thing. And it's like, yeah, maybe some of the maturity of the tools are kind of new and hot, and they're very prevalent in the media. But, you know, there's different aspects of it. Like, you don't have to work in virtual production in real time to just go after and say, oh, well, I'm not doing things that are Mandalorian level or, you know, broadcast graphics. It's like, well, there's still other avenues into real time and mixed reality and volumetric capture and VR and AR. And I hate to break somebody's people's bubbles, but VR is not dead. It's not going anywhere. Just neither is AR. And they're just evolutionary things.
Exactly. You know,
VR, did it hit as a consumer like an NES or like Xbox or PlayStation? No. But I think that had to do with some of the barriers to entry in terms of price to accessibility, shitty experiences that were built haphazardly that just were not engaging and made people sick because, you know, the understanding of you know, technology and human locomotion being inside of a near-focused HMD did not maybe get as much experiment time as it needed to be in the early days. But we see this. Look, we see all these, they're trends, you know? Trends come and go. The whole thing of virtual production, real time, VR, AR, XR, pick your flavor of R or nomenclature. It's like all the vizs, you know, tech viz, post viz, pre viz, you know, they all have a bit of the essence of each other, you know, and that's why virtual production is like a blanket term, and, you know, mixed reality is, and because you can have VR and AR in virtual production. It's just this whole ecosystem, you know, and you look at it, it's very Bob Ross, you know, you got the palette and you get a little, you know, a little oak and a little yellow, and you just mix them all together. And sometimes you get a new color, and that's where technology hopefully leads us, is virtual production is not killing green screen or blue screen for as many as the advertisements of the LED manufacturers say, like the death, seen so many titles, the death of green screen. It's like, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
There's things that I can do, or we all can do, much faster throwing up a green or blue screen than we can, mm-hmm. you know, throwing up a very large LED wall or an LED volume. It's just going to be, is it the right tool? Is it the right thing for your story or for your job? Because mm-hmm. take all this technology away, if your story sucks, it doesn't matter how good your graphics are, your visual effects are,
yep.
or your actor is, you know, this stuff is there in service of the story. You know, mm-hmm. if you have a really good storyteller and you have somebody with a really creative eye, like a Roger Deakins, maybe the $300 million heavy visual effects Marvel film won't do as well as the tried and true 2D shot on 35 millimeter, really good Coen Brothers story shot by Roger Deakins. You know, it's just like people get so caught up in the tech and like, oh, the shiny objects and hey, I got to use Unreal or right. I got to do. It's like, sometimes I tell producers or directors just like, hey, maybe virtual production's not right for this job, because I don't want to steer another creative mm-hmm. down this rat hole just for us to land a job or just for us to do it. It's just like, I'll be honest, like this looks like if you go this route, it could be a shit show. Maybe you just want to shoot and do a traditional comp workflow.
I was wondering how much of your time at Dimension, especially like since Mandalorian came out, is just spent educating, you know, like do customers come in and say, oh, I got to have this, I want to do this. And it's trying to like calm them down. And how much of it is like going out into the world and being like, hey, did you know that these things exist? And this is why, because I feel like there's just, like you said, there's buzz out there, right? People want the toys. They want the shiny new thing. They want the social proof of being the people who did it first. You know, like how much of your like day to day is just like being like, cool, this is what we can do. And this is why you want to do it.
It's getting to be a little bit more evened out, but it's still definitely heavy educating. I have worked with visual effects supervisors that have never stepped foot on an LED volume. Mm-hmm. And there are other talented people that work in visual effects that haven't touched some of the real-time tools. So you have lots and lots of people that are going to be like, oh man, you know, oh, you don't know Unreal? Or, you know, it's like, nope, never touched it. And it's a whole education. You know, you look at it from a studio perspective versus an individual freelancer. And why I say it's always good to do some time in the trenches at a studio, because you get a different view and a different peripheral of working as an individual in a team mm-hmm. that would work on a studio film versus actually being in-house at a studio. Totally different workflows. And if you get the opportunity to do it, you should, just to get the experience, you know, especially if you're younger in your career. But yeah, the education, because this stuff is still at its points very technical. It's engineering mixed with game engines, mixed with, you know, broadcast tech, camera tracking. It's yeah. called production for a reason, because it's still production. You still have your right. grip and your gaffer and your set deck and your, you know, your traditional production rules, whether it be union or non-union. And a lot of these people do need to be educated. And, you know, when I go on set as a virtual production supervisor, that's kind of my thing, like a visual effects supervisor would do, is you're kind of the glue between the different departments on, you know, if it's an in-camera visual effects shoot, because it's a dance. You know, you have to be good with people.
Yeah.
First is you have to know that there's a dynamic on any set, big or small, that you have different departments. You have camera team, you have set deck, you've got art team, you've got producers, you've got client. And, you know, there's a dynamic of egos. There's a dynamic of just job to get the shoot done. And you have to kind of be able to be a people person in knowing when to give and take. And, you know, visual effects too is still sometimes seen as a second class citizen, and virtual production falls under visual effects. Mm-hmm. So I've got to do the dance with the camera team and go to the DP and be like, hey, I get your world. I come from your world. I'm a DP too. Just know that this big Sputnik that I'm asking your first AC to put on your camera is going to make all of our lives a bit better. And I'll promise that I won't make your camera too heavy that, you know, shit is just falling off the camera. So, you know, you really have to be, you should develop your people skills in this industry as a whole, but in terms of like the educating, and I will be the first to say, like, I don't know everything about everything. Nobody does. If anybody tells you they do, they're selling you something or trying to. And I learn every day in this. I learn every day from the teams we work with that are external to Dimension. You know, we've worked with a lot of studios and a lot of other great vendors at Palon and Third Floor and Lux Machina and you name it, and DNEG. I guess that one big advice in the education of this and getting in the system is, you know, there are times where it's good to have your eyes open and your mouth shut and your ears open and know when to be kind of that sponge and then know where you can help in terms of, you know, solving some of these problems. So within the day-to-day of educating people, I think some people are getting a little bit more familiar. Like, people have been getting back on set this year in terms of virtual production and spending more time learning about this stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's still the very deep technical things of like, how do these all connect? And it's just like, hey, if you got five different vendors all trying to jump on Perforce Depot together, like, some people have no idea what the hell you're talking about when you say source control. Mm-hmm. So they've never worked with Perforce or another source control or versioning software for large teams. And if you don't have tools like that, your shows aren't getting done. You know, they're just, you're not sneaker netting drives around, you know, these right. days. Like, you have an AWS bucket and you are using cloud-based solutions to be connecting to different studios and sharing assets. Yeah, I think it's a constant evolution of educating people. And I think I'm fine with that. Like, I come from, you know, I have taught before. I've taught visual effects and editorial and cinematography, just because I feel like it's good to give back. And I don't mind the educating, because it's, if you can educate and you can connect the dots for people, even though they may not ever touch on Unreal, but if I can educate a producer of like, this is why I need this team in place, this is why I need this time, and this is why I need this budget, you know, then you're gaining more champions to not only the use of these tools, but then also the understanding, because that's always a big thing with all of us in motion graphics and visual effects and CG as a whole, or any artist, is, you know, we're always trying to convey the tools we use, why we charge what we charge, you know, and why we're fighting for the things we fight for. And if you can gain more people on your side that these tools are useful, because I've heard people look at it and kind of balk and go, oh, virtual production and volumetric, it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. It's not cheap. It's still not cheap, but there are avenues to get things done at totally different scales and totally different budgets. And us going back to the exploration, if you don't explore these tools and their opportunities, you're not going to know if one tool can fit or one workflow can fit the low budget project and then the mid-tier commercial and then the $300 million feature film. So that's the big thing. It's just like, the only way you're going to grow as an artist or as a person is to like, go do that thing, go experiment. Yeah. We all get caught up in data. It's like, hey, I don't have time. Like, you know, I've got three kids, you know? So it's like the whole thing about work-life balance and how do you stay on the bleeding edge and all this stuff. It's like, it's really hard to learn how to balance, even for me. And, you know, if you're a single parent who has kids, or you're in school and working a job and, you know, maybe you're taking care of a sick relative or parent or whatever it is, like, totally get how finding the time to like experiment when your day to day is like, okay, well, I got to stay in After Effects and on Cinema 4D because I got to do this. It's like, if you don't carve out the time, it's just not going to happen.
Well, I think that's a perfect time to ask that, because you've given us so many things to think about, and you name dropped so many apps and so many new tools. But you know our audience in terms of, you know, like a motion designer, right? Like you said, a C4D, After Effects, Photoshop. One of those kind of like meat and potatoes artists who's just, you know, getting stuff done, but there's a curiosity. What do you think would be like just to finish this off, just a really good entry point into just this world of all of these new toys, these new things that you can play with that, A, like it's not too deep to just feel like you have to get totally lost in it, but also could like show up in your day-to-day. It could be something that you could take to your art director or your supervisor and be like, oh man, guess what I know? Did you know we could do this? Is there a tool out there that you think for anyone listening, like as soon as you're done with this, go to the internet, look this up. What tool do you think could have like add to those people who are curious?
It's gotta be Unreal. I mean, it just hands down, it's a really good hub. And I would say the first thing, anybody that's just the core C4D artist, render some stuff out of C4D and bring it into Unreal. Learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. Just like easiest thing, download Unreal, open it up, grab one of the test projects, render something out of C4D, and just know how to bring in a file or just even take in an Illustrator file into C4D, because there are people doing motion graphics. I mean, you know, there's tons of examples out there. Obviously, we brought up Jonathan Winbush has a ton of C4D to UE stuff that he's done. And all right, watch one video, test it out and take a look at it. And then if you're Blender or maybe you're just straight up After Effects, you know, there's ways that you can get your, you know, your passes or your video, like learn how to bring in a rendered MP4 into Unreal. You know, there's tons of test projects out there that Epic even puts up in the learning center that you're just like, oh, well, they give me some assets. And, you know, I do know that they're paying more and more attention to motion graphics because there's tons of broadcast graphic learning tracks on the Unreal side. And I mean, Andy Blondin at Epic, you know, and Michael Gay, they both come from ESPN.
Right.
And, you know, you don't get more broadcast and motion graphics driven than, you know, ESPN and NFL. So, yeah, I would say that one tool to kind of go to is right now it's Unreal.
And that's a great suggestion because it applies to so many different After Effects artists. I mean, I know when I used to do in the broadcast booth, you know, generating lower thirds and generating, you know, stuff like 10 minutes before we went live, having something like Unreal, even to just do things like that, you would think it's super counterintuitive, but the speed that you could get that stuff out and make quick changes and during a commercial break, drop in a new one and hand it over to the guy running the Chiron, I can imagine how much faster and how much more I could offer that team just with something like that. It sounds crazy that that would supplant something like After Effects.
Yeah, build the asset in After Effects or C4D, but then you can render it real time for broadcast playout through Unreal or through Disguise or through Notch or through Touch Designer. But, you know, the reason why I lean more towards Unreal or suggesting Unreal is there's so many resources in terms of education. I mean, there's so many on YouTube. You know, and Epic does a really good job of spending a lot of those Fortnite V-Bucks on hiring people to do education and hiring really good. You look at the internal teams at Epic and you're like, okay, that, you know, Kim Labrie and Mark Petit and you know, Matt Madsen and Miles Perkins, like Sally Ann, who runs the London lab, like you've got all these professionals from our worlds, you know, both in visual effects and CG and traditional production and the like. And they're going like, oh, well, these people are asking for these tools. And is Unreal going to replace C4D or anything like that? Not today. You're still going to use your tools. But I just think that's a good focus for those wanting to get in. And it's just like, that is what people are asking for. Like, I can tell you from Dimension side, we can't hire Unreal artists fast enough. Yeah. And that's the thing, is there is a gap in knowledge right now for virtual production and for real-time artists, not only for virtual production, even for, you know, digital humans using MetaHuman Creator. That's why I say get out there and learn it, because you can get hired. If you are seasoned in motion graphics, visual effects, and you've now got this new, you know, tool in your toolbox, which is, you know, learning Unreal or other real-time tools, you're A, going to be sought after, and B, you're going to have a whole new vision into like what the possibilities are.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's almost even hard to imagine where your career goes if you redefine yourself as a real-time artist and just get into a production pipeline somewhere. Like where you can go right now, saying sky's the limit's almost even stupid, because we don't even know where it's going to go, right?
There's no ceiling. Yeah. There's no ceiling right now. And if you're a freelancer and you want to stay a freelancer, you can charge a nice premium as a day trader mm-hmm. if you've got the chops in a real-time engine, especially in Unreal, because it's complex. But if you're really good, and I don't like the whole thing of specialist versus jack of all trades. It's mm-hmm. like you kind of have to be a jack of all trades these days. You got to know a little bit of ZBrush and a little bit of, you know, C4D or Maya or Max, and it's in your best interest to dabble a little bit. I would say the two things. All right, so I'm going to take back just the Unreal thing, and I don't spend enough time in it as much as I need to, but Houdini. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I'm surprised I haven't said Houdini even more so, but holy shit, Houdini is crazy. And we've seen some of these like top tier level Houdini artists and just the back end of Houdini. And Subset, for those who don't know, Houdini came about because Houdini and the backstory is the founders of Side Effects split at one part, and that's where we get Touch Designer from, mm-hmm. you know, as well, because there was a little bit of division of people early on. And so anyway, yeah, pay attention to Unreal and Houdini, and they're both daunting when you first open them up, but it's like, okay, do that one little sprite, import that one little graphic, and you're just do the building blocks. I mean, Baby steps. It's all it takes.
And you build them together and you go and find the people that you need to ask the questions and you find the resources. It's all out there. Jim, we could talk for another hour because we didn't even get into much about Dimension Studio and this amazing Coldplay video that you guys did. So we're going to have you back because I think...
Well, you can watch the video. I mean, it's rad. It's the video is really cool. It was, you know, obviously there were other territory was involved and, you know, there was, you can go to Dimension's website and we've got a little piece on it. And then the official Coldplay BTS behind the scenes video too has got some stuff about our volumetric capture process in there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a nice music video to work on. It was definitely a very cool one.
Not many music videos this day and age that have that kind of scale or budget, or I'm sure just production pipeline applied to it. So we'll next big project that Dimension does, we're going to have to have you come back on and we'll talk about what all the new tools are all kind of floating around the world. But I think you did answer the question for us. We said at the top of all this, should we be all learning Unreal? The answer probably is yeah.
Yes, for sure. I mean, Unreal and Houdini, those are the kind of two that I can say. And that's not only because I'm trying to hire those type of artists and TDs right now, but I think everybody that's listening and that is looking for where do I go next or what's that next tool, it's like, maybe you don't learn another plugin, maybe just dive in full into this new system.
Awesome. Jim, as always, thanks. And you'll be back again soon.
Oh, definitely. Got lots of cool projects coming up.
Man, talking to Jim definitely feels like we're living in the future. And I want to bring him on a lot more often because I really feel like while you're in the day-to-day grind of trying to get your work done, you know there's a whole world just around the horizon waiting for you. Tools, techniques, new ideas on working, new expressions of your creativity. And Jim, he really does live in that pocket day to day. So what do you say? Should we bring Jim back? Let us know. And also, let us know what kind of projects you want to hear about, what kind of tools you want us to be exploring and learning and helping you gain access to. Until then, here at the School of Motion Podcast, we're all about inspiring you, introducing new people like Jim, and just helping your day-to-day just be a little bit better. Till our next one, peace.